Hello and what is shaking, everybody? Welcome to the Wind Up Podcast. I am your host, Mike of MTGA Wines, and today we're back into the wine business and the lifeblood, which is the wine club side of the wine industry and how a lot of us small producers operate. This conversation goes all the way back to 2 years ago, in episode 14, for those of you that want to go back and kind of get a refresher of this topic and why wine clubs are so important, but also the evolution of them and how I think wineries need to try to adapt to what you all want from us small producers. That's the kind of stuff we're going to get into today. The last time we talked about this is very much just kind of the business aspect of it and why wine clubs are important. So we're going to try and expand on that today and hopefully create a little bit more of a conversation about it. I think this is a topic where wineries have been very, very one-sided. We have tended to just kind of act and not really evolve with the times. And this is something where I think there's a great opportunity for wineries and brands to really evolve and do more for you, the consumer. So we're going to get into all of that today. Before we do, of course, a few very quick announcements. Thank you for all of those that continue to download, listen, and subscribe to the show. If you're not subscribed, you can do so wherever you're consuming your podcast. You can also check us out on all of our social networks at MTGA Wines. That's on YouTube, where you can see me dance around during this show on the video kind of feed of it. You can also find us on Instagram, the social network formerly known as Twitter, for those of you that are on X. We do also post our episodes on X if you prefer to consume content there. And of course, the Book of Face. For those of you that would like more information on us, our wines, all the things that we do, you can head to www.mtgawines.com. There you can sign up for our newsletter, check out our wine club offerings, see what releases we have available. Please be 21 years or older to check all that stuff out. While you're there, you can also submit questions for our monthly Q&A episode, which, guess what, because it's a short month, is coming up next week. At the end of every month, every Wednesday, we try to answer the biggest questions that you all submit through our social networks or sliding into our DMs. We also pull a few from the tasting table out at the winery. So if you need to submit your questions, again, head to our homepage, mtgawines.com. If you scroll down to the bottom, there's a little email form that you can fill out and submit questions to me directly, and I will answer them to the best of my ability. All right. I think that's all we got. I have one more kind of update that's not kind of my normal announcement kind of thing, and that is the bridge. Some of you who listened to last week's episode or follow us on our social networks have seen the updates that we have had with the bridge going out to the winery. A lot of support from you all, a lot of great questions about kind of what we're doing and how things are going to get fixed. I'm going to give you all kind of a quick update here for just a couple of moments. Number one, the winery is still open and operational. We can get out there through one of our neighbor's properties. That way we can continue cellar work. We can continue doing kind of our day-to-day operations and hosting tastings. So for those of you coming out to Napa or planning a trip out here, never fear. We are still going to be able to host people and have you out to the winery, barring any other unforeseen disasters like bridges going out. We did learn a few things yesterday on February 18th. We had a meeting with the county, one of our local board of supervisors folks, who actually we know personally, which is great. The construction crew who is already out there working, taking some geological surveying and samples and things to try and figure out the new bridge and plans that they want to put in place so that we can get this done as quickly as possible. This was not all good news, though, however. We found out that on the bright side, or kind of the best estimate that they have for getting a new bridge in place, is mid-October. So we're talking 8 months between now and potentially having regular access to the winery again, which leaves us in a whole lot of limbo when it comes to harvest operations, when it comes to bottling, all kinds of other stuff. When I asked the supervisor and the construction folks what are the short-term plans to try and allow us to get everything from grapes and farming equipment, bottling lines, and so on to our property, they did not have an answer. So we're screwed. But we'll figure it out. There's, oddly enough, I'm not panicking too much. The wines are safe. They're in barrel. We just topped everything up. Everything's tasting great. I'm not particularly worried. We've got plan. We're basically on plan, like, I think D now, to try and figure out what we're actually going to do to get things to happen out there. We don't even know how we're going to get the trash out that's how, like, the short-term stuff just hasn't been figured out or thought of. We don't know how we're going to remove trash from the property because the garbage truck can't get to it. You know, cool, fun little things like that that we're trying to figure out and deal with. So luckily, we're in contact with all those folks. I'm going to be sending a barrage of emails out their way being like, hey, as soon as you have an update, I'd really appreciate it. So on and so forth, and such as the South Africa's. It's kind of crazy. We did learn something very, very interesting, actually. This was kind of a... hopefully, it doesn't become a point of contention. Technically, the county, and potentially even this, maybe not the cities, but the county where the winery is located, technically, our neighbors do not have to give us access to their property to access our own property. So in a worst case scenario, we could actually not be able to go through our neighbor's place at all, and we would have zero access to the winery, other than like hiking in across what is the current broken bridge, which you can walk across. There's a section of it that's still kind of intact. You know, that's which is always like a huge, that's a great vote of confidence, right? Like the bridge is mostly in, is kind of intact. Like most of it's gone and falling into the creek, but there's one little part you should be fine to walk across. But of course, that means we can't get even a personal vehicle out there, much less a truck or a bottling line or filtration device or anything else. So we're trying to play nice with our neighbors. So thank a huge shout out to them. You know who you are if you're listening. It is hugely helpful for us just to be able to operate and do the day-to-day. We're really hoping that the county will step up and actually do something about it and support them and be like, hey, they've already had to put in time fixing their driveway, grading a section that's been damaged because of heavy rainfall and, of course, extra vehicle traffic. Like, the folks that are helping us out have already had to spend money because of this, and we're hoping the county actually grows a pair and does something about it rather than just being a nightmare of a bureaucracy, which was the most annoying thing. There was actually one point during the chat, I was like visibly like shaking because I was so frustrated. I was ready to tee off on somebody because in true politician form, and this shouldn't surprise anybody, one of the kind of leaders out there was like, well, this goes back to the state level and tax rates and this and that over the last 10 years. And this hasn't changed, you know, classic politician, just we're going to pass the buck because this isn't our problem. This is someone else's problem. Like we're doing everything we can. Obviously we're here, we're doing the thing, but clearly we had nothing to do. This is someone else's problem. And I was just, I've never felt like stabbing somebody before ever, but I was pretty close. I was like, stop it. Like, stop trying to pass the buck here. Like, we need to get shit done. Your non-answer and completely dodging our questions is not helpful in any way, shape, or form. And it's certainly not helpful that you're not taking responsibility for your fuck-ups. But I digress. All right, that's enough of that. We are going to figure it out. Things will be fine. It's all going to be fine. This is why I went straight from coffee to wine today in my glass. So we got some single barrel Pinot Noir that I'm sipping on. I was like, I need to have something delicious to get after because it's just been a couple of days. But let's dive into the meat of this episode, shall we? And actually, I'm glad I opened up this wine because this is one of our kind of wine club only wines. And as we get into, you know, this conversation, this is something that really wine clubs center on, or, you know, wines that are kind of limited in availability. But to give you, if you don't go back and watch episode or listen to episode 14 of the podcast, I'll give you a quick recap. In that, we talked a lot about the business aspects of a wine club, and that is, in essence, a wine business's annuity, in that it's something that we budget against. It's something that we decide how much wine we're going to make every year, if there's any flexibility there, you know, with our contracts and so on. You know, it is something that really is the lifeblood of a small wine business. If you don't have a healthy wine club, you better be doing something else on your mailing list. You better be doing something else in the wholesale game. I mean, if you're a small brand making less than like 2,000 cases like we are, you really need to have a focus on it. I really don't know how you survive otherwise, to be completely honest, because it is just so important. And it's something that really dictates how you are able to operate, what revenue you're going to expect from a given year, and how you can invest back into your business and grow it. Or, you know, understand that you're actually going to be able to pay the bills, keep the roof over your head and put food on the table, that kind of stuff. It's immensely important. So we talked a lot about the business aspect of it. And I had this kind of, maybe I wouldn't call it like an epiphany necessarily, but this like nagging question in my head, because every February, late January, early February, we have our first wine club shipment of the year. And it's the heavy hitter. It's where all of our small releases, things like our single barrel wines get released, the stuff that's really limited in production, like our Cabernet Franc. There's all kinds of stuff. It can be a little bit more of an expensive shipment, but we balance that out with a really nice kind of light shipment in the springtime with some of our more affordable wines. There's a lot that we do to try and, you know, make sure that we're not breaking the bank for anybody. But as I was kind of entering, and some of you listening are in our wine club, so I'm curious what some of your thoughts are going to be as we kind of get into this episode here, is as I'm processing orders and getting my packing lists all ready and placing an order with our warehouse so I can, you know, pull the wines and get things ready to ship out, it crossed my mind that wine clubs could potentially be doing a disservice to our clientele. And the reason that crept into my mind was because the advent of the wine club, you know, really in kind of the 2000s to today, you know, it hasn't changed much since the advent of them, I should say. Wine clubs really haven't changed that much. You know, you did have kind of like the allocation list thing. Think of like your Harlins and Screaming Eagles and really fancy cult wines where you kind of have the privilege of being on the mailing list and the opportunity to buy said wines from them. Even though you can't necessarily visit or taste those wines or get to know anyone who's involved with them. That's always kind of a bummer in my mind. But hey, they make great wine. Some of them are very, very talented. And, you know, there's a lot of hype behind them because they get a lot of ratings and reviews and all that kind of stuff for what they're worth. But outside of that, like, there's really not a lot that has changed or evolved over the years. And I got to thinking, what could we possibly do in the wine business to make wine clubs more interesting, to make them more advantageous to be a part of, to make them more interactive? You know, the way we normally approach it, and the way I think many wineries approach it, because really, you know, every wine club at every winery is kind of a cookie cutter model. There's really not a lot of variation. There's some semblance of when you visit, you get complimentary tastings. Maybe you get a discount on the wine or on shipping of said wine. You're going to get X amount of shipments per year, which is probably going to be roughly one case of wine throughout a calendar year. Maybe it's a little less, maybe it's a little more. Maybe you can select certain styles of wine that you want, whether you want just white wines or just red wines. Maybe you're getting access to really small production stuff that typically never, you know, that typically sells out, and you get kind of first dibs on really exclusive stuff. You get invitations to events around the country and so forth. Like, every winery kind of does the same shit. And we're included in that. I'm kind of talking a little trash about myself, but I think this is one of those things as a business owner and just as a person, being introspective is incredibly important and kind of challenging your norm, right? That is something that I think you have to do. So as I'm processing our, you know, January, February, our winter wine club shipment, this is what I'm thinking about. I'm like, what more could we do? And the tough part, I think, for wineries in particular is that we don't have a lot of ability to spend more money because it's such a cash-heavy business. And the only way we could really, you know, spend more to do other things and do like member appreciation type stuff is to raise the price of our wine so that there's more profit, so that we can spend more money keeping y'all happy, which means, you know, the wine you're buying is more expensive, but in theory, you're getting more out of the brand. You know, something that we do is kind of like a customer, like appreciation thing is that once you hit a 5-year mark in our wine club, we have a wine key that we send your way. If you end up hitting a 10-year, there's another, you know, cool thing that we're going to do, because we actually have folks that are getting to that point where they've been in our wine club for 10 years. Because I think we started in 2016. So we have a few of you that are coming up on that anniversary, which is crazy to me. So we try and do like that value add where we're going to buy some cool swag, or we're going to do something kind of fun for you, hopefully. In fact, the first 15 members of our wine club, the folks that joined first and foremost, we made a custom, you know, a limited run of these fleeces that are MTGA branded, that have kind of our established date of 2010 on the back and Roman numerals. Like, they're meant to be like, hey, you were a part of the first few people that actually got this really going in the direction it needed to go. And therefore, we are giving you, and this was, I think, 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, we did this. So it was like, hey, you know, a lot of you have been in the club for at least 5 years at this point. You're kind of the founders of it. Thank you so much. So we try and do stuff like that, you know, on top of like the event invitations and trying to travel and do things around the country. Like we spend a lot of money doing a lot of that stuff, you know, also to sell more wine because we invite like a lot of other people and we work with other wineries to put together some of these events and things like that. But again, I was trying to figure out like, okay, is providing like a little bit of swag and stuff, is it like will the thought count enough? Is that good enough? What more could the wine industry be doing, you know? For some of you who are maybe a part of our Grand Cask allocation, we do a monthly Zoom kind of happy hour and tasting. It always gets a little wonky during the harvest months because, you know, life gets in the way. But we try to do it the first Wednesday of every month to, you know, just have a glass of wine, kick back, relax, catch up, all that good stuff. Do we need to do more of those? You know, and I think the reason why this kind of like stuck into my brain and is something that I'm trying to wrap my head around, and I'm really trying to figure out like what avenue do we go down to be creative here. And there's a great podcast that I listen to. It's kind of a you know, a Silicon Valley like tech bro podcast called the All In Podcast. It's a bunch of like VC tech guys that are big like investors and insert, you know, company here. They've been involved in it most likely. And, you know, they're on the cutting edge of like giant, like multi-million dollar, billion dollar businesses that are moving forward. And it's really interesting to hear their perspectives on business. And while, you know, they're working, you know, with these kind of top level Fortune 500 or whatever companies, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I think us small brands can learn from that. You know, maybe we can't operate quite like they do, but at least you can try and like garner some sort of, you know, nugget of information from it that might be advantageous for what you're trying to achieve. This is something that I do regularly with the wine business, is that I rarely look at other wineries and say, hey, we need to be doing that. I look outside of the wine. I look at fashion. I look at hotels. I look at food. I look at clothing. Or I said fashion. I look at tech. Like I try not to, you know, focus on the wine industry because I just don't think it's advantageous. It's something that I think can get really stale. And because of that, you know, you have wineries kind of living this echo chamber where they're all just kind of doing the same thing. And maybe there's a slight variation here or there, depending on the brand, right? Like maybe that's a thing. So how can we adapt some of what like other companies have done over the years to make wine more interesting, more engaging, more approachable, all of these things? And that's really kind of my next bastion of like, where do we go from here kind of conversation when it comes to access to wineries? Because there's so many of us, you know. At a certain point, I have to imagine for some of you have probably felt this way because I've felt this way. If I'm in the industry and I've felt this way, I'm sure some of you as consumers who are members of wine clubs and things have felt this way, where at a certain point, the wine's good and all, but it's like, but what else is there? You know, sometimes the wine is enough. Fair enough. If it's like, there have certainly been clubs that I've been a part of where I'm like, you know what? They're good people. We want to support their business and we're going to do just that. That's good enough for me. Then there are other things where it's like, you know what? I kind of need a little value add here. Like what else you got going on? I know that's when we were members of Tromsrug for the longest time. It was like, hey, number one, we love bubbles. It's great. Number two, we love going to the parties. You know, there's always something else to like go and do with them. You know, the same thing happened with, you know, wine clubs that we were part of up in like Anderson Valley and so on. It was like, hey, there's like, it's a great little getaway. There's an excuse to get out of the valley and go do something or go to an event. You know, those are cool. But again, it still kind of fits within the normal cookie cutter approach to any wine club or allocation list, whatever the, you know, thing is. I've had a hard time trying to identify, as I kind of talked about all these different industries and how I try and look at them, I haven't really been able to pinpoint one that makes sense and what wineries could do, not just us, but just wineries in general could do better or more of, knowing that, especially right now, budgets are incredibly tight and there's really going to be, it's going to be a tough time pulling a rabbit out of our hat to make stuff happen. So I'm at a little bit of a loss, which is comes back to the, I want this to hopefully be a kind of open conversation and engage with some of you in a way that's like, hey, like, what do we think? Let's throw some stuff at the wall. What can we stick outside of like swag and wine keys and jackets, outside of events around the country? Like, what is it that other industries and other companies do really well in terms of engaging with consumers? You know, is it enough to do Zoom calls? Is it enough to do invitations to events around the country? Is it enough to post on social media and interact with you all kind of at a moment's notice? Is that good enough? And I don't know if it is anymore. I'm trying to figure out what the next step is. You know, because you look at like the tech world, as we were talking about, like AI is the thing, right? It's all about how a certain country, whether it's ours or somebody else, or along with a certain company, is going to leverage it and get to a point where it is truly better than someone else's AI, right? Whether you're talking about Grok, OpenAI, was it DeepSeek, the new Chinese model that got released a week or two ago that kind of blew up the tech world in terms of like, how the hell did that come out of nowhere? Like, what is it about wine that's going to like kind of jump out and get people? And what's going to engage with people and make it exciting for people to dive into, you know? Like, what is that going to be? I have an idea, and we've already kind of started moving this direction, so I'm hoping this is the way wine goes. And it's something that we preach about all the time on this show, and it's something that really hasn't picked up a head of steam just yet, but I think it's getting there. Ah, Pinot Sasting Grey. We even opened it last night, and it's still just like chilling. It's beautiful. I love when you can open a bottle of wine the day before, have a little bit of it, and then just let it, in essence, kind of like decant in the bottle for the next day, even two, and you're like, oh, it only gets better. Something I love about our wines, very selfishly. Toot, toot, beep, beep, there it is. So the thing I think that's going to be the next big thing, and this was a question that we got when I was hosting a tasting this last week. This was going to be something that I was probably going to feature in the Q&A, but it just fit too well into kind of what I wanted the theme of today's show to be. And I had a shout out to Hans and Vanessa, who are out from the East Coast. Great to meet you all. I think happy anniversary as well, I think it was. Killer to have you out to the winery. Thank you for going through our neighbors and figuring out how to get around that broken bridge. But they asked, part of the group asked, and it might have been Hans or it might have been Brian or Audrey. I can't remember who it was that asked specifically, but one of the four of them asked, like, hey, what is the next thing? What's the next step? Like, you've clearly gotten this business to, you know, a point where it's sustainable, where you can make a living at it. You're making great wines. There, you've kind of got your lineup and everything that you're making is, you know, where it ought to be. But like, what's the next step for the business? Like, where do you really want this to go? How is it going to evolve? Like, where does it need to be to like kind of take it to the next level? And I was dumbfounded by the answer because I didn't have one. I was just, or the question, because I didn't have an answer for it. My answer, and hopefully it made sense, was, you know, if you will go back 16 years ago to when I started making wine, the last thing I would have imagined was that I'd be working for myself with my own wine label, doing what I'm doing today. If you had told me that I'd be standing here in my office recording a podcast, you know, about wine and hospitality and all this other stuff, I would have told you that you're out of your damn mind. That just wouldn't be a thing. Like, that doesn't sound like me. Yet here we are, right? So, not having ever imagined anything like this, but planning and preparedness equals success. That's just something that we took to heart with our wine labels and our business. And that's, you know, as doors opened, we were just able and ready to walk through them. And that's what we've done continually, is just be ready to take advantage of the next opportunity, whenever it shows up. It could be a very awkward and weird time, but if you can still capitalize on it, then you run with it. But long story longer, there's not anything else I want to try and achieve with MTGA and my own labels. Like, we're here. We made it. We're making great wine. We've got an awesome fans that love to listen to me over the interwebs here. We've got a great wine club, I think, as we're talking about it. Our business sustains itself and allows me to put food on the table and pay my mortgage. Like, what more can I ask for out of it? So, with the focus not being, well, not saying I'm not focused on it, because you have to stay, you got to keep your eye on the prize. You know, if you know, get remotely lackadaisical in this industry, it's really easy to go under. Just ask the mergers and acquisitions that have been happening and the tasting rooms that are closing and all that good stuff. You know, I started looking at what the wine industry can do better and what we can do better. And the first thing that came to mind, of course, was transparency. This is something that we talk about a lot on this show. Y'all have heard me talk about it quite a bit. And it's something that we, you know, take very, very seriously, because we want people to be comfortable with the wine they're purchasing. I saw an interesting chart this morning from winefolly.com about kind of sweetness levels in wine. And it was kind of a gross generalization, but it gave you a decent idea. But it naturally puts certain varieties as like naturally sweeter versus others, when the variety has no bearing on whether or not a wine is sweet. It's purely winemaking that dictates that. And I'm like, this is, you know, a pretty decent website. They've got some great information, but this infographic's just incredibly misleading. Like, it just doesn't really jive with what the industry, how the industry actually operates. And that was clarified kind of in the text below. But if you're just someone kind of bypassing something on the internet and you see something on Instagram as you're doom scrolling at the end of the day, and you see this of like, oh, it looks like Cabernets are typically more sweet than Zinfandels, which are typically more sweet than Sauv Blancs. Like, that doesn't make any sense at all, because that's not how it works. And it leaned right into this idea that like the wine industry does a shit job of being its own advocate and trying to bring people into our world in a comfortable, meaningful way that makes sense. Now, do you need to know, you know, every little nuance about winemaking? No, you don't. But to generalize and say, oh, Rieslings are naturally sweeter than, you know, Zinfandels, is just wrong. That's not how it works. It's up to the winemaker and the operations of that particular program. Yeah, sure, there are going to be some very sweet Rieslings out there. There are also going to be some very sweet Zinfandels out there. It depends on how the wine's made. And I think this is something where, you know, as much as objective as like some things can be, wine's just not one of those things, because it is kind of this art form, right? And we need to instill in people that some of these like nitty-gritty details really don't matter unless you love the wine and you want to know more about it. Or if you don't like the wine and you want to know more about it. You know, we need to instill confidence in people that gives them the ability to just enjoy wine for what it is and hopefully learn more about it. But understand that when it comes to farming and winemaking, there's a lot of non-answers, because it's totally dependent on the farming, on the farmer rather, and on the winemaker. And depending on what you're leaning on in terms of your production techniques and tactics, a wine's going to go one way or the other, right? And we need to do a better job as an industry of bringing people into our world and get rid of the fucking gatekeepers. This was something that was promoted during Premier Napa Valley, which that starts this evening. If you're listening to this on a Wednesday or February 19th and continues through the weekend, Premier Napa Valley is the big fundraiser for the Napa Valley Vintners, kind of our marketing and advocacy group here in Napa. Some of you might be familiar with them. And we do a big fundraiser. We donate some wine and people get to bid on it. And that, in essence, ends up being the NVV's budget for the year, so to speak. That's exactly how it is. And there's a panel being hosted, I think, this morning by Jeb Dunnock, whom I've not met. I know a lot of people submit their wines for him to be rated or reviewed or and so on and so forth. But, I mean, this is no offense to Jeb. Again, I've never met the guy. I don't know what he's like or who he is, really. I mean, I know who he is, but not as a person. We've never met. But I look at the email of like, hey, here's this great, you know, seminar or Zoom thing you can jump on, and Jeb's going to talk about this, that, or the other thing. And I'm like, I just don't care. Because I look at ratings and reviews and kind of the critic world of wine and sometimes sommeliers as well as being these gatekeepers that basically kind of saying, they say the quiet thing out loud of, if you don't know enough, you can't appreciate wine. And it's just so inherently wrong and just so frustrating. And I know that, I know for a fact that's not what he said. I don't even need to listen to what this seminar or whatever it was this morning was. I know for a fact he didn't say that. I know for a fact that Psalms don't say that. That's not like, you know, this verbatim thing that they cast out there and say, hey, by the way, we're the experts. Let us tell you how to enjoy wine properly. There's not a single person in the industry, to their credit, that will do that. And if they do, they're idiots because they're just wrong. This is one of those moments where the customer is always right. Sometimes that's not the case. In this situation, when it comes to whether or not you like a wine and appreciate it your way, that's all that matters. You are always right. We got a great note. Shout out to, I think it was Phil out in Colorado. If you're listening, bud, this was a great note that we got via email. That he had popped open a bottle of our Cabernet Franc. They had cooked a bunch, I think it was halibut, a nice white flaky fish. And we're like, we popped open this wine, one of the biggest, baddest wines we've ever made. We paired it up with this fish and it was outstanding. Great meal, great night, kudos, which warmed my fuzzy little heart. But I was like, that's it. That's what we're talking about. You do not need to open your big ass bottle of red wine with a ribeye steak. You can do it with fish. You could do it with oysters if you want. You could do it with pasta. You could whatever. Just do the thing that makes you happy. Eat and drink the things that make you happy. And for some reason, it always feels like from the critic side of things and kind of the wine education side of things, from the, you know, kind of teachers within the industry, you know, that there is kind of this adversarial relationship with consumers. And that if you don't know enough, you need to rely to a certain extent on us to make sure that you enjoy wine to the fullest. And I think that's something that wine clubs and people within the industry, as far as sales and connecting with people, need to do better. Is a big reason why we started, for everybody, not just our club members, but for everybody, started publishing very detailed notes of how we make our wines with links to other companies and FDA regulations and all kinds of things, that where it's like, hey, if you want to get really nerdy and take like some of the power into your own hands, it's there. All you got to do is reach out and grab it. So I know we started this conversation with, you know, how can we adapt like the wine club allocation model? And it probably, you know, your assumption might have been like, okay, so how's this sales channel going to change? Like, how's it going to evolve? What can we do differently? And I don't know if there's like an overt way that you're going to overhaul a wine club or an allocation program. Unless one of you has a gangster idea that you'd love to share with the class, I mean, please feel free to, because I don't know how we're going to do it. I really don't. But I do think we know how we can improve people's relationship with wine, the brands that they like to support, and bring you into our world in a more meaningful way. And I think that's something that people are starting to look for. And this goes back to the conversation that we had actually with the NVV, the vintners, and kind of where the wine industry is and how there's been this downturn and we got some headwinds facing us. But you know where the headwinds really are? It's not for the small boutique kind of high-end wines. I mean, it's tough, don't get me wrong. But if you're looking at like $20, $25 and less, those are the wines that are getting eaten alive right now. They are in a lot of trouble. Which tells you, I think, that consumers in general are moving to a quality versus quantity mentality. That we don't just want a bottle of insert red wine here from the big box store because we feel like having red wine. We want something that we can connect with, something that we understand. And I think that is the low-hanging fruit, pun intended, for the wine industry and for wine clubs and our sales channels right now, is continuing to build consumer confidence and as a result, understanding of the product that they're purchasing. It is the biggest thing lacking in this industry is transparency and access. It should not be that hard to understand wine. It should not be that hard to enjoy wine. It should not be that hard to buy the wine that you want to buy. Granted, if you're a small brand, you sell out of stuff, that can make things challenging because you just don't have enough supply. Fair enough. I get it. It's what we have to tell people about our Cab Franc all the time. It's like, get it while it's hot because once it's gone for a year, basically. So stuff like that does happen. But that doesn't mean you still can't connect with people. That still doesn't mean that you can't try and build more of a, I mean, this sounds a little woo-woo, but a little bit more of a relationship and kind of this advocate that helps, you know, kind of spread the good word about your wines. A lot of you do this, in fact. I mean, there are a lot of you out there that are listening that were referred our way by somebody else who had never heard of our wines previously. There are some of you that have sent people our way saying, hey, you got to go out and check out these labels. Go say hey to Mike or Britt and hang out in the cave. They're gonna bring you into their world. And I think that is the most important thing that needs to happen. I think kind of the days of the pomp and circumstance of kind of the experiential nature of wine tasting and wine clubs and things is kind of, it's, I don't want to say the sun is setting on it, but it's kind of reached its limit. Because you can only hear so many people drone on about the same, oh, our grapes are hand harvested only and we typically ferment them in these vessels. And like the miscellaneous like technical data and like the sales like spiel that people give, like it's boring. It's worn out. There's nothing remotely, you know, interesting about it unless you are just that nerd. That's fine. Like if you want to know the ins and outs of winemaking, like we got you. But read the room. And understand how wine and what you're doing really connects with people. That's the next bastion, I think. And it's adapting and your spiel, it's adapting your sales personnel, whether it's yourself or your wine club or hospitality team, and being like, try to find the best way to engage with somebody. Sure, you gotta tell the story. Sure, you gotta let people know how it got started and a little bit of a background on the brand. Sure, you got to do your normal stuff, but get out of that box. There's a door open in there. All you got to do is walk through it and figure out what is really going to connect with people and make wine interesting to them and make folks really key into what you're all about. I think that is the next big move for wine clubs, for tasting rooms, for salespeople in general, is really keying in on what makes wine meaningful to people and somebody. Because we can only throw so much swag at you guys. We can only produce so much wine. We can only say this comes from the most premier vineyards in Northern California so many times before you're like, okay, we get it. You make fancy wine, whatever. Like there's only so much you can do from kind of this, the overt kind of traditional wine marketing bullshit. Like it's time to really connect with people. And that is where we need to head as we move forward, especially in a year where a lot of brands are facing headwinds because there's no connection. If your brand's in trouble right now, it's because not enough people are connected to it. Period. Doesn't matter if it's in every, it doesn't matter if it's in Target or in every steakhouse or you're a direct to consumer brand only. If you're in trouble right now, it's because you do not have this connectivity. You do not have advocates out there preaching the gospel for you. That's where you need to head. And I think that that is something that is only going to be advantageous for any company long term. You know, you can work through the short-term trends of ups and downs of sales and marketing and you know, stuff like that. Like, you can work through that stuff. You're going to have to in some way, shape, or form. Like, times get tough in every sphere of business, not just the wine industry. And those that have really built a solid foundation tend to do okay. Doesn't mean times aren't tight. Doesn't mean they're not tough. But they tend to weather that storm. While the ones that are on a shaky ground get washed away. Damn it, that was a good analogy to end the show. Oh, sometimes I even impress myself. Thank you all so much for tuning in. I'm sure that was kind of a winding, wandering monologue of where the wine industry needs to go, but also what needs to be done for you as consumers. You know, I truly believe that there's only so much stuff that we can like throw at you. There's only so many discounts people can give. There's only so many events that we can do around the country. So how can we connect better with you all? And I think that in a world where connection is so easy, people kind of bypass it. And it's more important now to connect on personal levels with people and things than it ever has been before. Because I think we started to lose a little bit of that. It's easy just to scroll through your screen and like something and say, hey, I did my due diligence. I wish them a happy birthday through Facebook. So it's fine. I'm the one that's like, I don't do that anymore. I'll wish you a happy birthday when I see you. You know why? Because that's more meaningful. Or if you're really that important, I'll pick up the phone and I'll call you. You know, or at very least a text. I'll try and do something that is a little bit more personal. But in theory, I want to see you firsthand, give you a hug and be like, hey, happy birthday. That's what I want to do. And I think that's where the industry as a whole needs to head. Thank you all so much for tuning in. It's been a great, crazy episode, week, all the things. We will be back next week for our Q&A episode. Be sure to submit your questions. Slide into our DMs. Leave comments wherever you're consuming the podcast. We will try to dive into your questions. You can head to our website, mtgawines.com. We have a newsletter going out this week about all the events that are coming up around the country. We're going to be on the East Coast. We're going to be in the Midwest. We're doing literally all the things everywhere all at once, just like that movie. And follow us on all of our social networks at MTGA Wines, YouTube, Instagram, The Book of Face, and the social network formerly known as Twitter. Be sure to like, share, subscribe to the show here. Share it with all your friends. Get it out there. And hopefully you all find some, for you big wine fans out there, are finding more meaning and more connectivity with some of the wines that you're consuming. Because I think that's the way of the world, and that's the way the world is moving. We're tired of being behind, you know, the curtain at a certain point. We want to see how the sausage is made, and that is becoming more important. Have an excellent rest of your day, week. We'll catch you next time on the Wind Up Podcast. Cheers.